in the Philippines, poverty porn is such a thing. If you say anything about poverty or something like that, because they thought that my comment was elitist, they will just like attack you without thinking.
Entrepreneurs love talking about business. However, it's no secret there's also so many things they love talking about which are not about business. In the Sea of Business podcasts, none of your business is a refreshing break, a surprise kiss, an afternoon fizz. Through Carla Singson's cheeky and radical takes on mundane and principle-heavy topics, you'll gain insights that guarantee you something to talk about on your first Tinder date, while visiting grandma, or if you want to impress your new boss. Big thanks to Proximity Outsourcing for sponsoring this episode. Outsource the most tedious tasks in your business, such as data management, appointment setting, and creatives, for less than $12 an hour, fully managed. Visit ProximityOutsourcing.com for more info. Tired of business podcasts? Tune in to None of Your Business. New episodes weekly.
Hello, good morning, and welcome to another episode of None of Your Business. Today is another fun episode with a topic that a lot of you guys might be curious about and that you've seen happen in some of your social media accounts or profiles. Maybe this could have happened to you. A lot of entrepreneurs deal with this and as a thing in their daily lives, hopefully not daily. But today we are talking about online hate. So when your business is online, it's very possible that at least once in your career, you would receive a lot of online hate. And today we have a super special guest. He is Manish Sethi. He's an American entrepreneur with a background in psychology and computer science from Stanford University and Harvard. Manish is known for founding Pavlok and its sister product, Shock Clock. These are wearable devices that use electric stimuli, vibrations, and rewards to break bad habits, improve good habits, and wake up users without any chance of hitting snooze. While Sethi's career includes being a digital nomad and author, his primary focus remains on Pavlok. Manish has also been seen on Shark Tank, The Colbert Report, and the Steve Harvey Show, and more. So, hey Manish, how are you?
Hey, it's great to talk to you, Carla.
Yeah, we've been planning this podcast for a while. And, you know, Manish and I are actually really good friends, obviously without his consent. And because we don't care about that. I'm just kidding. But also, one of the things I really remember was, of course, seeing your very famous Shark Tank video. Very famous and very controversial. And I think that's how all of these things started. So maybe you can tell us a little bit of background on that. And how did you get your fair share of online hate?
Sure. So I've been in the online world for a while. Before I started Pavlok, I used to write a travel blog called Hack the System, Cheat Codes for Life. So I'd go around the world doing experiments, teaching people how to become a famous DJ in 90 days, learn a language in 90 days, get free plane tickets, stuff like that. And in around 2012, I did a series where I tried to become more productive. First thing I did was I lost 28 pounds in a month. And then the second thing I did was hire a girl to follow me around. And every time I wasted time, she would slap me in the face. I posted a blog post about this, about getting slapped in the face for productivity, because in 4 days, I wrote 4 months of content. And the post just went viral. I was being inundated with TV offers, with phone calls, with interviews. For about 3 days, I was in New York City. I was famous. And around day four, nobody cared anymore. It was the press cycle. So I thought to myself, how do I make this happen again? How do I bring up the next level? What if I make a dog shock collar zap me every time I go on Facebook? That could be pretty funny. I call up a friend of mine. He's like, yo, let's go to Radio Shack. Let's do it. So we went to Radio Shack. We bought a little Arduino, a dog shock collar, ripped him apart, hooked him up to a computer, wrote this little script that every time you open Facebook in a tab, it would go zzz, zzz, made this really funny video. And I was about to post it online. And I thought to myself, this is actually really interesting because there are a million wearables out here that are tracking what I do. But this is the first one that's actually changing what I do. Maybe there's something here that's deeper than a funny story. Maybe there's something here that could be a real company. So I took that idea and I raised a little bit of capital and I moved to Boston and I started building this product. And early on, about a year into the company, we launched it on Indiegogo and the Indiegogo went viral. The story is just inherently viral. And so I was getting approached by a bunch of TV and New York Times and stuff like that. And one of the people that reached out to me was Shark Tank. So they asked us if we'd be interested in doing an episode. I said yes. Right when it came down to the final signing, we weren't ready with the product. So we said, let's delay this till next year. So we did. We delayed it till the year after. And in that year, we had a ton of success. We won Shopify's Build a Business competition. We got to spend a week with Richard Branson on Necker Island. And we won, we ended up like having a very successful business with a 4.8 average review on Amazon. And then we went on Shark Tank. And I think that it was not Mark Cuban's best day. I expected all the sharks to love me and it to be a huge success. I also changed my pitch late in the game. I took bad advice. I was going to pitch the exact same pitch I just told you, the I hired someone to slap me in the face story. I worked with a company that helped me come up with that idea. On Necker, somebody recommended I go for a heartfelt, emotional pitch and talk about how you could save your loved ones, et cetera. And it wasn't, I mean, it's not that I don't care about saving your loved ones, it's just that the story didn't resonate with my vibe. And so I think it led to, but also Mark Cuban was filming eight episodes that day and all the other seven candidates said the same thing, that he was just a dick to them all. So I think he was having a bad day. Anyway, what happened is we go on the show, I make my pitch, and all the sharks are, for the most part, liking it, nodding their heads, interested, asking me, oh, wow, could it work for nail biting? How does it work for this? How does it work for this? The issue, though, is Shark Tank is a little bit like Lion King. You have Mark Cuban, he's Mufasa, and then you have Mr. Wonderful, and he's Scar, and then you have the other three, and they're hyenas. They just follow what the leader says. So as soon as Mark Cuban starts saying some really ridiculous stuff, he's like, "Why are you using clinical studies to back up what you're doing? You're not allowed to use past scientific evidence to support your idea. You have to run your own studies." But that's just not true. And as soon as he started saying things like that, the hyenas changed, and the whole vibe on the show changed. And so it went from a very positive experience to Mark Cuban calling me a scam artist for no reason. So at the end, all the sharks are out except for Mr. Wonderful with his Mr. Burns hands, and he says, "I'd like to offer you $500,000 for 3% of your company." The issue is I came in there expecting to get an offer from all the sharks and to turn down Mr. Wonderful because he is fundamentally a bad person. He defrauded his investors with his first company at Mattel. He was on TV saying that a billion people making a dollar a day is a good thing. And I would never work with somebody like that. And so I had to turn him down. I said, no, I won't take your offer. I'll work with anybody else, but I won't work with you, Mr. Wonderful. And, Shark Tank zooms in, camera effects, lights, and Mr. Wonderful looks at me with a tear in his eye and he says, "Get the F out of here," or he says, "F you, Manish, get the F out of here." And that was the end. So I got offered $500,000, I turned it down, and I got told to F off by one of the sharks. So that was the episode. The issue that was interesting to me is I thought I came across great. I made a decent pitch. Like you've seen it probably. And like if most of the people I know who are somewhat smart see it and they hear the words that are being said and they understand the content of what I'm saying. And they're like, that was kind of weird how they treated you. The issue is that a lot of people who watch Shark Tank don't listen to the content. They kind of follow the leader. And the day after the show aired, 38 one-star fake Amazon reviews were posted on our Amazon page. And it destroyed our rating from 4.8 to 2.9 and dropped our revenue. Worst of all, the comments for the next year or two were so negative, calling me scam artist everywhere. I was getting phone calls. Somebody found my phone number and found my mother's address and
Oh
started
my God.
making death threats. And it was just a very weird, odd time for me. And so that was kind of the story of how the hate began.
Yeah, it's that's crazy because like a lot of it didn't make sense, like you said. Like, why would you even say that you can't use past scientific studies? Like, that's why they're published,
That's
so
the whole
that
point of science.
other people can use them. That's why
Yeah, it's
we publish books, right? And
yeah.
journals. So, yeah, you're right. I think they were just having a bad day because they're not stupid people. They shouldn't be thinking that. But for these people to just kind of continue hammering on their principle and them feeling, not even having proof for it, feeling that you're a scammer or a charlatan or something like that. That was definitely weird. How did you feel when you got those fake Amazon reviews, just the death threats? These people were not your customers. You didn't steal from them, take anything from them. What did you think was the reason why they would do something like that?
I have no idea why somebody would do something
Right?
like that. It really kind of disheartened me for humanity. Like, I don't know, like before I was such a pro helping everybody in the world sort of thing. And like after that, I'm like, I can't believe there are people out there like this. Like that is such a, like, I get it. Mark Cuban didn't like me. We didn't vibe. He was mean to me in person. Whatever. I can get over that any day of the week. But someone to see that on TV and then I get it. You can see me on TV and not like me. I get that. But to go out of your way to write a fake review, that's just mind-boggling. Like, what is up with you as a human being to do something like that? Like there's just so many levels and layers of just negativity and anti-good in that. And so it really was a very negative experience for me from like a humanity perspective. It really changed the way I looked at a lot of things. And like, you know, it is what it is though. I mean, for me, I mean, I'll tell you that personally, I think there's a lot of people who really resist hate. And I kind of thrive on it. I'm kind of like you know how Michael Jordan would start fake fights so he could have a reason to push himself. In a lot of ways, I am Michael Jordan.
I can see the resemblance.
same haircut, same 3-point percentage, more or less. Anyway, the thing is that like, I can't 100% give pure advice to people who are resistant to hate because to me, I had a poster on my wall for many years that said, "Sometimes I feel like giving up, but then I have motherfuckers I have to prove wrong," and that like hate kind of led me to push myself. It led me to do a couple things. The first thing was it made me really care about proving them wrong. It gave me a real like fire that it burned under my ass to work harder. And secondly, we had gotten, I'm not gonna lie, our first product was not really perfect. It had a lot of bugs and flaws. And our review, we were coasting on selling a lot through good marketing and through good reviews that were from early adopters. I took the next year to really shut down our marketing department and focus on product. It really had made us look inward on how do we make sure that our product will be a long-lasting success and more importantly, help our users, because we can't live off of our early adopters 4.8 star reviews anymore. We really have to focus on quality of product. So in the long run, I think it would just led to a better quality company and a better quality product. But for sure, the negativity and the negative reviews have persisted.
Yeah, that's really interesting what you said about people. And because I experienced like a small version of that when I had that viral donut post where I said a very simple thing, you know, you're wasting your time buy one, get one donut. So even a minimum wage would make more money. Minimum wage person would make more money than lining up to get a $3 discount. That post of mine went, I think, 5 million impressions, and I got rape threats, death threats. Yeah, I've had guys messaging me, I will find you and I will rape you. And I'm
Crazy.
like, wow, for saying something about donuts, like, Jesus Christ. Like, some, yeah, I've had people, emailing me a picture, photoshopping my face on a coffin, like
Jesus
going
Christ.
through these lengths to, and I didn't take anything from them. I didn't take anything from them. I just said an opinion that they disagreed with. And so it was really weird. But also in the Philippines, poverty porn is such a thing. If you say anything about poverty or something like that, because they thought that my comment was elitist, they will just like attack you without thinking. So I think a lot of people on social media are like that. And you said it benefited you because instead of trying to put out fires, PR fires, you became focused on building the product. So what was it like for your team when all of these things were happening?
I mean, it was a hectic time because our first product had just been released. We were shipping, making hardware is a crazy thing. I mean, and we were doing it all in-house. None of this was made in China. It was all made in our factory. Like we had 3D printers going. We had people soldering. It was a hectic time. And so it was just like, I mean, the work would have been done anyway. The difference was that we couldn't coast off these sales, and I really did start caring more about the quality. And I stopped focusing on doing marketing and media and conferences, and I started focusing on quality control and working on the actual product with our customers and with our employees. I don't think, I mean, I was a I'm a pretty like inspirational leader, so I don't think I think I used that as a lot of like I think I used it to fuel the fire of our employees. Like, come on, guys, like look at this. This is awesome. This means that we have something to prove. Let's do it. Let's prove these MFs wrong. But it worked out. It worked out. I mean, the thing at the end of the day is that good press or bad press, if you have a quality product that solves a problem that people need, you will not have problems. And we are lucky enough to have created an invention that nobody else has created that really solves really serious problems in a way that nobody else can. And so even with our problems, even with our lack of quality, sometimes we're able to say to serve our customers in the way that they need us to.
A 4-star review will not, a 2-star review will not deny the positive change that you've given someone when they say, you've helped me stop smoking, right? Or you've helped me reduce my stress because I've developed better habits and, prolonged my life and, things like that. Those are really big and undeniable wins. So right now in the age of social media, a lot of founders are encouraged to put themselves out there. In a way, it was kind of good for your team because like the hate kind of maybe focused on you and your face and you can like shield them from it. But I also think that a lot of founders could be hesitant to do that. In what way do you think would exposure as the founder be beneficial to the brand? And when a founder decides to do this, what should they be careful about?
I think it depends on the type of brand, to be honest. Like in the long run, I'm not really present in the visibility of my company's brand anymore. We're a physical product selling a physical thing that you buy on Amazon and it ships to your house. I'm sure that like things like this, these podcasts are pretty minimal commitments of my time. I'm sure that they help a little bit. And they in the past, in the early days, like I did a few really big podcasts. I did one with Dave Asprey with Ben Greenfield. Those drove a lot of sales. So things like that, getting the word out, it can be helpful. It depends on kind of what you mean here, though. There are other kinds of brands where you've got a lot of competition, and if you have a lot of competition, you need something that gives you, like a, it makes you look different. And there's a company we used to use. I wish I could remember the name. They are a support chat company. They focus on business support chat, kind of like an intercom competitor, and. I remember they, the author, I mean, the founder released a couple books on Kindle, and I read those books. And to be honest, they were not that great. But the fact that he had written books on business and I read them made me much more likely to contact him and use his stuff as the as his service. It wasn't a very good service, and I didn't use it for very long, but it did make me pay them for a few months. Like I think that like talk about like what are the majority of your users or your listeners? What kind of businesses are they running?
A lot of them are entrepreneurs, maybe online entrepreneurs for sure, consultancy and agencies mostly.
Sure. So take proximity outsourcing, right? You got an agency that's selling a service that's useful and needed by many, but also there's a lot of competition, right? You take an agency like that, and you gotta fight against the current of just information and competitors. And so, you know, if I search for outsourcing, your best outsourcing, maybe I see your ad there. Costs you money, maybe it works, but already you're attacking a customer at the point of the customer already knows what they want. There's a lot of people that don't know what they want. There's a lot of people that don't know they need virtual assistants. And by having, you know, content and creating having a brand, like imagine, for example, you have like an Instagram that goes viral for something like, here's how I'm able to live my perfect life thanks to my virtual assistants that I'm able to delegate my work to. You know, you might reach a subset of people who didn't know that they needed a virtual assistant. And the founder's face and being able to, you know, understand and know that founder gives them, gives some, you know, some subset of people able ability to feel like a connection and like they're going to choose this person because they feel like they know that person. It works even better in person. Like I'm sure when you go to DC or other conferences that I've seen you at, when you meet somebody, you can instantly identify why they need a VA and offer them some kind of, you know, something that makes them interested, and they're going to pick you first. So I think that like opening yourself up can be said, and you know, it's a very vague or broad term, but the act of getting the founder as a face of a brand that has competition is very important in competitive industries.
Right. Yeah, the differentiation, especially because if you're going, being in a dense industry is good because you don't need to validate anything. Like that's also one of the things I thought about when I started an outsourcing company, especially as a Filipino, everyone and their mom has a VA agency, but like how can we make ourselves different and special? And so that's how we slowly move to doing managerial roles. And right now we only have, I think, 30% of our team are VAs. And so personally, I enjoy being in public and just meeting people. And my company is just there as an afterthought. But I think as a woman, there's additional things that our walls are always higher, right? Compared to men when it comes to putting yourself out there as a brand or as a face of your business. How did this whole experience like affect your company and your leadership in terms of finding people that really match with your corporate culture? Like, did you like how was hi did hiring get better, basically?
I don't know. Like, I mean, a lot of people knew me as a Shark Tank guy. But already I had a lot of press before that. Like, I don't know. I think that I've been fairly good at hiring. Actually, that's a total lie. I've been very, I had like four, like three or four cycles of very bad employees before I figured out how to hire well, by hiring for personality. By hiring one great person, because you need a great person to bring on great people, and finding those great people. I think that, like, I can't really say that it really helped me with hiring. I think that basically hiring is a really important strategy. And there's like a lot of personalities of founders, right? There's like integrators and visionary founders. I'm certainly a visionary founder, and I'm very, very, very good at delegating, but very, very, very bad at doing any kind of operations or any kind of execution. And early on, I would bring on anybody who would work with me, and that ended up being like, you know, bad people who would hire multiple other bad people, and suddenly we had a middle management, like we had like five middle managers in a 15 person company. It was just ridiculous. And so like, I don't think that the experience itself led to good hiring, but I will say that getting like becoming a qu be, like becoming a quality employer starts with understanding your personality and understanding what your business needs. You know, I know you're familiar with Myers-Briggs. I realized like early on that I had all the ideas in the world, and we didn't need other idea people. And focusing on bringing in perceivers was just useless. They would never be able to contribute. What we needed was a judger, you know, people who could finish and execute the tasks that were given to them. And you know, I had like a little tactic I would use early on in hiring, where we worked at a WeWork. There's like a glass conference room, and I would walk by the conference room during their interview with one of my people, and I would drop a bunch of books on the floor. And personality type, your J versus P personality is highly correlated with your peripheral vision. So basically, if they looked up, they weren't hired. If they didn't look up because they were focused on the conversation, they were hired. Understanding the type of personality I needed was really integral. And once we brought the key thing was that once we found those great people, I let them just run the hiring, because they, like, you know, A players hire A players and B players hire C players. Once you get an A player, just let them do it. You know, you just let them do it, because they feel great when they build their own team. That's been kind of what we've been focusing on, and I think that that's worked out well for us.
Yeah, no, I really like that insight because a lot of people in my industry, a lot of people say that entrepreneurs are natural salespeople or you're such a natural visionary, natural everything, natural leader, right? But one thing that's really not natural is hiring. And so I like the point that you have, it's a skill that you need to build and it's a mix of like knowing the technicalities and experience, but also having personal standards. Like you said, A players hire other A players and they will personally hold all of your applicants into a particular standard. So I like
Exactly.
that. Yeah, and I also learned something from that PR could not does not actually bring the benefits that you think it would. I actually expected that this gave you a notoriety in terms of like it helped you hire better. You got people that are super committed to like just working with you because they believed in your mission. Did you meet those people though?
Yeah, I mean, I think our mission has always been a very pure and strong mission, to change the world's habits. I just can't say that the Shark Tank experience itself affected it. I think that we've always had a really solid group of people who really understand where we're coming from and what we're trying to do, and who commiserate with the mission. And I've really enjoyed working with my staff.
I see. And then what did you think you would do differently in terms of dealing with the online hate after? I know you said that you regretted changing your pitch last minute, but did you regret anything that you did after when you got all of these online hate?
I could have put a little more effort into like doing more press immediately after. I could have probably spent used that as a one of my regrets that I don't know if it's a regret or a great thing that happened is I didn't take any further investment. I never raised capital from VCs. And early on, I was in incubator. I was Boston and San Francisco based. Those were the days where you could raise, tens of millions of dollars pretty easily without giving up more than half your company and still be the owner of your company. I'll never know if that was a good or bad idea. I would have had more capital, but I probably would have died faster or died or exploded forever. And I think at this point of my company's life cycle, it's probably maybe a little too late to raise like serious venture capital. I'm not sure if that's true. That might just be me talking, and it might be false. But I do think that if I could have two lives, I would like to see what would have happened had I used that to go raise capital immediately after.
That's true.
Because the company that I built is a wearable device company. Every product that we make costs over $1 million to make and takes many years to build. And I'm very time limited. I'm very cash strapped when I try to build a new product. And my dream has always been to build dozens of products in the consumer electronics space focused around smart home, smart technology, and habits and behavior. And I'm just unable to do it at the pace I want to. And the only way to fix that is through capital raise. And I've always wondered what would happen if we had done that. So I think I could have utilized and played the investor game a little differently. But I don't think that, yeah, exactly. But I can't imagine. I mean, our company works, our product works. I don't know how it could have been different.
Yeah, exactly. So it's just like a little bit of that what if, like
Yeah, it's not a
an
regret, it's a
alternate.
what if.
Yeah, exactly. So it's not that bad. It's just like that girl that you ignore that was pretty and passed by and you're like, what if? Or a guy and you were like, what if I was gay? And then your Pavlov shocks you because that's a bad habit.
Moving
So
on.
moving on. So I like I like the advice that you gave very early on in this episode, actually, when you say that there's a lot of really good ways to use hate as a fire, as a fuel to your fire, and think of all these people that you need to prove wrong. I super resonate with that because I had high school bullies and I definitely had people who didn't believe in me. I had like ex-partners who didn't believe in me. I had an ex-boyfriend who told me, you will never make more money than me. Like, I'm like,
Wow,
okay,
what a
so I still
loser.
have a small penis. But so I do like that advice. But what are the possible pitfalls you think that someone would have if they take that advice, like to the extreme, like what should they be careful of?
Sorry, can you say that one more time? Just the
Yeah,
last part.
so like
What was the advice?
using other people's hate as fuel to your fire is good, but what are the possible pitfalls or what should someone be careful of so that they don't go like extreme?
I mean, sometimes hate is valid. If your product sucks, your product sucks. Fix the thing that's broken. When I get hate from people who haven't used my product, F them. When I get hate from users who use my product, I feel really bad. I really failed my customer. Sometimes people can create a persona of hate, which, might, there's a lot of people that create very divisive personalities, and that can work. I mean, I'm not saying that having a divisive personality won't work, but then you can become like that MyPillow guy, very much in the e-com space, who really destroyed his own life through his divisiveness. There are people, so I think that you have to be careful that you don't fall into the trap of believing that the attention is a good is always a good thing. Not all press is good press. I don't believe that. I do believe that 90% of it is, and you should go for more, but I don't believe that all press is good press. And I think that people can get fo can get fall into a trap of becoming a personality who they're not. Yeah, I think that the biggest thing though is that make sure you understand if the advice is legit or not, because hate is BS, but but like if it's hate due to, yeah, hate from customers is different than hate from non-customers. It's basically that. If you're getting hate from customers, it's a real thing. So like fix that.
And also, I would add to that, there's also some cultures that are very resistant to anything innovative. I realized one small thing that really annoys me sometimes with the Filipino culture is like the culture of crab mentality, or like that, if someone's innovating, someone's doing something awesome and new, a lot of people will try to bring you down, and it doesn't make sense. It's definitely one of those things that you said are hate from non-customers, and it doesn't even have a valid, beginning. But I would also think about, is this something that's just kind of in my culture and not entirely the hater's fault? Do you have
I
that? I
mean, like
mean,
the thing
you.
is that like Americans don't have that as a cultural concept, but it certainly exists in America. I mean, it's like all the
Some
people
sort
who are
of
writing on
bitterness.
Amazon are writing this. Everybody on Reddit is got this bitterness in them. Yeah, I'm sure if you read any like 90% of Reddit is just anti happy
Anything.
people.
Yes,
And
that's
like
funny.
it's just people, man. It's just cultural to be like, if someone succeeded, then it's because they're horror, like because they're screwing you or whatever it is. They're gonna fail because you don't want to look inward and see that you could actually succeed too. It's not because they're successful. It's like when someone else succeeds, it's got to be that they're gonna fail or they're cheating, because
Oh,
otherwise
yeah.
you have to look at yourself and say, I'm not succeeding because I'm not doing something. And
Yeah.
so it's just a natural function of human behavior. Unfortunately, there's no way to fix it. I don't know how to answer. People have always asked me this, so like, how do you get past the hate? And I mean, there's no real answer for me, because I think from you too, like we have the same similar personality type. We love hate. Like, I mean, I don't
Yeah.
love it, but I don't not like it. It's not like sometimes I love, having a few drinks, jumping on the Facebook comments and just being horrible.
Ooh, I love that. I love
Yeah, right.
that. Yes.
And just making fun of my like I don't know, because the thing is like you it's I, again it's just it's impossible for me to like really commit like empathize with people who don't feel it, because I can give advice, but I can't understand if my advice will resonate, because I just don't have that initial framework or feeling. But like, if you can get past that belief concept, if you can believe that hate doesn't matter, that's the first thing. It's not that it's good or bad, it just doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Like it comes and goes. It will exist, it won't exist. You'll have good days, you'll have bad days. Who gives a fuck? That's just how it is. The first thing I can say though is a lot of these stress and problems go away once you're making money. Like once you're like all the shit fucking goes away when it doesn't fucking matter, right? So once the money's coming, like fix make the business work. Make your goddamn business work. Once your business is working, then like I like to use it for fun, man. It's like I use it as like a fun thing to do. Like I said, jump on the face. Like I've noticed that like jumping on Facebook comments and me, I'm gonna do that right after this call. Jumping on the comments and just like already 80% of our Facebook comments are horrible. All right. We have like negative Shark Tank, plus we electrically shock people, right? We're gonna get weird comments. I get it. There's just no way around that. That's not your business, that's my business. And like we're gonna get weird comments. So instead of being like, oh, I'm sorry you don't believe in aversion therapy as a technology, here are some stories. Instead, I'll just make fun of people and be like, "Have you ever tried shocking yourself in the face? Because you're really loud, things like that." And being like rewarding hate with hate, I'm not saying it's a good idea. I'm just saying it's fun, and it often brings other commenters in who start playing with the fun, and it turns it into a game. And so, like, I again, this is not our brand, and it's just something we sometimes do. But it's much more fun to be playful with hate than to like. It's always going to be better to be playful with hate than to be sad because of hate. Sad has no business in your business. And so if you can't like block and delete and block or reply in a humorous, funny way, but you can't let it get to you because there's just no value in it. There's just no value. Like you have to be pragmatic as a business owner. And it's like, you don't have to do anything, but do not let negative emotions from other people be a thing that exists, because that is just stupid. There's just no positive benefit to it. So either ignore or delete, but like do not let negativity become part of your mental process. And actually, Pavlok can help with that. A lot of people do use Pavlok for reducing negative thoughts by pressing the zap button manually. Unfortunately, we cannot read your thoughts yet. You're able to break habit loops in the brain by creating a negative stimulus that occurs. So like a lot of times when people find themselves, I've done this a lot. When I find myself complaining, I press the button mid-complaint. And what happens is that the brain starts to recognize early on when this thought loop begins and starts to identify the source of these thought loops. I used it once when I couldn't stop thinking about my ex-girlfriend. And I started zapping myself every time I kept thinking about her. After a couple of days, I realized that the thoughts started right when I would eat breakfast because she had given me a gift of breakfast plates and I was eating off those plates for breakfast. And by throwing those plates away, I was able to completely remove the trigger once and for all. So what I'm getting at though is if you, what I'm trying to say is that, utilizing Pavlok, if you catch yourself with a negative thought, you press the button, the process starts to unravel and you start to identify the triggers that are creating them. That's just a technique and a tool. There's other techniques and other tools. I don't think there's other tools, but there's other techniques you can use to reduce negative thinking around these emotional barriers. All I can say is that if you are finding yourself with negative emotions related to other people in your business, figure it out. Pavlok therapy or something, but figure it out because it's not helping you.
Yeah, I love that. I love that. You're absolutely right about guarding kind of your energy and your emotions and your thoughts, right? That's very, very useful. I actually did a little experiment a few weeks ago. So I had 1 week where I filled my brain with trash. And so I was on Reddit all day, literally all day. I was watching Love is Blind, Too Hot to Handle, just like really trashy stuff. And I was following like trashy Facebook groups, Facebook posts. And then the week after that, I had like almost zero TV. I didn't go on Reddit, and I was just reading a book, meditating, working out, and it even made a difference in like my business revenue. It was crazy. And so, sometimes these little negative things can unconsciously snowball into other things, into your decision making, your leadership. And I don't care how you translate that or whether or not you believe in energy also, but it is something that you can control, your negative emotions, and then how you deal with whatever negative thing that comes to you, just like, online hate. So
Totally.
I love what you shared about that. So well, thank you so much. You've given us a lot of advice. So I'm super curious what's next for Pavlok. What is tell us about the most exciting thing you're working on.
Sure. Well, the big thing is our launch of Shot Clock Max. It's the new Pavlok with the screen. So for the first time ever, you don't have to use an app to set your alarms and set your timers. And it's been really, really fun because people finally are not annoyed by the connectivity in the app. They can just set their alarms directly on their device. By the way, I didn't really talk about it, but Pavlok's like a silent electric zap alarm clock that trains your brain to wake up with just a vibration silently without disturbing your partner. We really help people who are like couples who one person hits the snooze button a lot. We're able to train the other person to wake up silently and never hit the snooze button. And the way it works is that we basically use behavioral psychology principles, so as well as classical conditioning principles. So the way it works is that you basically get a vibration for 30 seconds to wake you up silently, and if you don't wake up, the alarm progresses to an electric zap. It's not painful; it feels like a pinch, but everybody wakes up to it. And what happens is that on day one, you sleep through the vibration, you wake up to the zap. Day two, same thing might happen. But by day three, your brain learns that a vibration means that a zap is coming. And the vibration alone significantly wakes you up. So the coolest thing is that our product is able to help people wake up without hitting the snooze button, without even zapping them. And so one of the thing that I'm really excited about with our new product is that it has both a screen, which makes it a lot easier to use, and also a heart rate monitor. So the heart rate monitor is giving us really good access to your sleep information. We have this feature coming out I can't wait to use called the Perfect Nap. For many, many years, I wanted to both do polyphasic sleep, where you sleep only a few hours a day, a few minutes, 30 minutes at a time, several times through the day. And I also just wanted to take good naps. But I would always have this issue. I would set an alarm for like 30, 40 minutes, and I would even sometimes just fall asleep 5 minutes before the alarm was set off, or I wouldn't fall asleep at all.
That happens to me
So
too.
the All the time, right? So the Perfect Nap feature I'm super stoked for lets you say, all right, I want a 25-minute nap in the next 50 minutes. So the device is now measuring when you're awake and when you fall asleep. And in the next 50 minutes, as soon as you hit the bed, as soon as you actually fall asleep, that's when the timer starts.
That's when it starts,
And it will
yeah.
wake you up. So you'll get that full 25-minute rest rather than having to
Yeah.
wait until the end. So that's one of the features I'm most excited about. Now, the other thing we're about to probably launch is a new smart ring. It's
Nice.
similar to the Aura. It's a ring that helps you track your sleep without being on your wrist. And when you put them together, you get kind of really excellent sleep data, sleep information. And lastly, we have a really cool Pavlok AI Habits Coach, which
Ooh, that's nice.
we just released. Yeah, basically, we absorb all the data you give us. You know, if you give us your Apple Health data, you give us your Pavlok sleep data. And our coach is able to look for interpretations and correlations and identify what sort of things are causing other things to occur. And you can ask that coach questions and it'll identify interesting habits for you. And interesting like ramifications of your current behavior, as well as give you challenges and give you ideas for how to improve your behaviors and habits and how to achieve your goals. So those are kind of the really exciting things that we have coming out of Pavlok.
Wow, that's super exciting. Do you have a timeline for the AI coach?
It's already in testing. We'll probably launch it in the next 3 or 4 months.
Oh, wow, that's exciting. Perfect.
Yeah. The Shot Clock
Okay.
Max is currently available on Indiegogo. It's actually shipping. And it's really cheap right now. I think it's like $99. It'll be like 170 when we launch. So if you're interested, just Google Shop Clock Indiegogo, or go to pavlok.com and you can grab it there. Pavlok. That's like Pavlov, Ivan Pavlov, but with a K. Pavlok.com.
Okay, perfect. And to everyone listening, I'm also going to share all of those links on the show notes to make it easy for you guys to find those products to correct some of your bad behaviors if you want to. Yeah, Manish, thank you so much for spending your time with us. I'm super happy we finally got to do this. And I'm super excited for the future Pavlovs. I'll definitely get myself one.
Thank you.
Yeah,
I'll see you very shortly in Playa.
see you soon. Bye.
Bye.
So it's a wrap. To my entrepreneur friends, I hope that you found this episode interesting and enjoyable. I know I did. Big thanks to our sponsor, Proximity Outsourcing, for making this possible. If you need to outsource anything in your business so you can scale fast and easy, visit proximityoutsourcing.com and check out their solutions. If there's any topic that you want to request, feel free to reach out. I only have two conditions. You tell me why you find it interesting, and you promise it's not business talk. Find us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and YouTube, and leave us a comment or review because you're cool like that. This is your host, Carla, and thank you so much for joining me. Thank you for your interest in fun stories. Now we can get back to business. See you next week. And remember, everything here is none of your business.